You're listening to Real Estate with Kevin Turner on News Talk 4BC.
Thank you, Jocelyn. 7 past 7, good to be with you this morning. We're talking real estate. And we do that for Calypso Bay, where you can live your dream lifestyle in Southeast Queensland's premier waterfront development. Visit them at the website calypsobay.com.au. And also Water's Edge Apartments, delightful developer. This one, we've told you about this one over a few weeks. It's down on the Redcliffe Peninsula. It is absolute waterfront luxury, 90% sold now, and they start from just $875,000. Change your life. Change your lifestyle. Go down and check it out for yourself. That's at Water's Edge Apartments. I'll tell you more about that as the show progresses too. So what's coming up today? Well, it's a big day today for fans of Channel 9's The Block, with the auction going to air tonight. How have you found the series? It's been fascinating, hasn't it? How about the contestants? Maybe you've picked a favourite to win. Well, we may just be talking to a couple of them today. Will and Carly will join us in just a few moments to talk about their anxiety about tonight's auction. Also, I'm going to speak with BrickX CEO. I'm going to tell you about how you can get into a Bondi property, Bondi in Sydney, for under $100. Would you believe it? Well, I'll give you all the lowdown on that. And, of course, everyone is talking about the impact on the property market now that there's a new president-elect in the States, Donald Trump. We will catch up. I had a fascinating conversation yesterday and hit the record button with Michael Yardney, and I'm going to replay that for you a little bit later in the show too. Really interesting. We look at the entire market, what's happening in Australia, what's likely to happen, and his impact on the property market around the world. If you live in Ipswich, it's a great spot to live. But if you live in Redcliffe, I've got some fantastic news for you. The Real Estate Institute of Queensland has got some really good news for property owners along the new Redcliffe Peninsula rail line. We'll share that with you later in the show too. Coming up to 7:10. The most competitive series of The Block ever is set to conclude tonight at 7 o'clock on Channel 9. Our 2016 couples have enormous potential to earn millions of dollars, because over the last 11 series, well over $14.5 million in prize money has been dished out. And two of the competitors, the two from Queensland, Will and Carly, joined me from apartment number one. Hi, guys.
Hey. Hello. How are you going?
Good. Pretty exciting. Yeah, pretty excited about tonight, are you?
Yeah, we're really excited, but we're also nervous at the same time. So you never know what can happen. And, you know, some people have won lots of money, some people haven't won much money at all. So it's all a bit of a gamble for us, but we've got high hopes.
Yeah, are you glad it's over?
Yeah, we are. You know, it's been a bit of a roller coaster ride the last sort of 6 months for us, and a lot of commitments. But, we're going to miss it, but then we're sort of glad it's over too, so we can get back into a routine and maybe get some fitness levels back up. We've been pretty lazy.
Eating all the wrong food, keeping terrible hours.
Exactly right.
Yeah. What's been the most difficult part about being on The Block for you?
Probably the most difficult part is the lack of sleep, I think. You know, there was a few weeks where you would only have a few hours sleep on a Thursday, for instance, and then you won't sleep until Sunday. So you're going, you know, over 48 hours without sleep. And, you know, we're all on the time constraint, so we're trying to deliver these amazing rooms in, you know, less than 7 days. That was fairly difficult too. And, you know, you had to project manage it so well to make sure you didn't sort of forget anything. But, yeah, the exhaustion and lack of sleep, I reckon, would be the toughest. Yeah.
You had a few run-ins there too. I think one stage, Will, you threatened to walk off The Block. Is it always in the back of your mind that it's a competition and that there's lots of money at stake?
You get so caught up in the bubble, the Block bubble, you sort of forget about that it's a competition. You're so dedicated and invested in your apartment. Like, it feels like our home, to be honest. I actually think we'll be pretty sad to see it, you know, say goodbye to it. Mm. You do forget that it's a competition, that there is prize money involved. And I think it was just, you know, stress and exhaustion, and I felt like we couldn't, you know, move forward. That's why I felt, you know, really down and really low at that point.
Yeah. Well, you guys came into it fairly well qualified, actually, when you look at some of the other contestants. How do you think you fared overall?
Yeah, look, we did really well overall, I think. obviously, there was only one time that we became chumps, so that was good. We won three rooms. It was generally a pretty good run for us, and we actually surprised ourselves because even though we are both in the construction industry, we're not necessarily hands-on in terms of renovation stuff. So Will's an electrician and he knows all about that, but he's not a builder. He doesn't know how to, you know, build walls and all those sorts of things. So it was definitely a massive learning curve for us, but I guess not as much as, say, two teachers or a teacher and a cop. So, it was a massive learning curve for us.
Has it spurred you on, do you think, to do other things after the block, like maybe doing a bit more renovating or decorating yourselves?
Yeah, definitely. Our first home, we just bought in Rochdale, that needs a full renovation. So it's going to be a block part two, I think. Might make it a little mini series or something. But I'm really keen to get my hands, onto a new project and, renovate and do more homes up and show, obviously, the public as well and sell homes, which we like. And
Yeah. Well, there's some pretty big money up for grabs. I think the record was Darren and Deanne, I think, almost $1 million last year.
They were just shy.
So we're going to beat them today.
Fantastic. Well, that's, all the best. We'll be there barracking for you. You are the front runners. I don't know whether you want to acknowledge that or not, but who do you think's your toughest competition?
It's really hard to say because everyone's got pros and cons in their apartments. So, the boys have the extra bedroom. Kim and Chris have the big master suite. There's views on the top floor. Dan and Carlene have really gone the Art Deco style. They've embraced that. We've got the courtyard and the really high ceiling. So, look, everyone's got pros and cons. We think our biggest competition is probably the girls, I'd say, just because that's our personal preference. If we had to choose another one other than ours, that would probably be the one that we'd choose. So,
Well, close your eyes, keep your fingers crossed and wish for the best if you do win tonight and take away a huge amount of money. Are you going to pour it into a business, into some renovations, or what are you going to do with it?
Well, we're getting married next year, so in April, so we'll pour it towards the wedding and obviously our renovation in Brisbane. So, we want to enjoy it too, so we'd like to go travel, see some countries that we haven't seen also. So a bit of fun and then a bit of business too, I think, but... We'll try to be smart about it.
It's a great backstory too, isn't it? I mean, with you guys, you've known it. You were school time sweethearts, I think.
We've been together for 9 years, and we started dating in grade 12. So, it's been a crazy ride for us, and this is just one of those experiences that we're really glad that we were. We experienced it together, and we thought we made a really great team, and. Fingers crossed we come out with a positive outcome tonight.
Was the block a bit of a test for your relationship, or has it already had enough of a test?
We probably already had enough of a test. We've been together for so long. We just, made it out like a normal day. But if we were stressed or, I was a bit grumpy, I'd always say to Carly that we'll go to bed happy. It's not worth fighting and getting worked up over it. We're already stressed and exhausted enough, so... Yeah, we communicated a lot on the block and we got through it pretty smoothly, actually, which was fantastic.
Good on you guys. All the best for tonight. You've been very generous giving us your time. We do appreciate it, and I know what how much stress you must be under. So all the best for tonight and all the best, more importantly, for your wedding.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's going to be an amazing day.
Weekend Real Estate with Kevin Turner. Thanks to Calypso Bay. Live your dream lifestyle in Southeast Queensland's premier waterfront development. CalypsoBay.com.au.
Keeping a tab on the market around Australia is something that most investors want to do. And a report that I can recommend to you is the McGrath report that comes out regularly a couple of times a year. Founder and executive director of the McGrath Group, John McGrath joins me. John, thank you. How often does the report produce? Is it quarterly?
Now, Kevin, we actually do the McGrath report once a year, but we do some updates often throughout the year, especially when we think the market's shifted. If the market kind of doesn't change from one report to the next, we just stick to that. But, we certainly like to keep our customers and anyone in the real estate community updated on what's happening to the best of our ability.
Yeah, well, it's certainly been an interesting market, 2016. John, what have been the factors that were driving price growth in the last year?
Well, I think, you know, when we look at the Australian market, the two markets that stand out in terms of price growth are clearly Sydney and Melbourne, that have seen 50 to 60% growth, and much of the rest of Australia has seen sort of relatively anemic growth, to be honest, Kevin. I mean, Southeast Queensland's at last starting to see some growth, but there are many parts of Australia that haven't seen it. I think in Sydney and Melbourne, a couple of things. One is we were actually just due in terms of where we are in the sales cycle. After the GFC, we were due for some growth. We hadn't seen any growth for half a dozen years. And so I think there was just a general cyclical nature there. So I think that's one. Two is we found that as the economy improved, investors were starting to come out and really want to get back into property, and many had either got out of property or certainly not acquired any more property during the GFC. So we did see a change in sentiment from investors, and that was also off the back of very, very low interest rates, making it unattractive to keep your money in the bank and particularly attractive to buy good quality assets like property. The last thing, or the couple of last things were, Kevin, one was overseas demand, and it was very well documented that the Chinese, overseas Chinese buyers were finding Sydney and Melbourne property very appealing. So that was a factor to some degree. And the last one, that's probably something that's been more relevant to this year as opposed to previous years, was an absolute lack of stock around, that we saw listings dry up by about 30 to, in some areas, 40% compared to previous years and normal volumes. So I think when you add those things together, more investors, low interest rates, overseas demand, an improving economy, and lack of stock, we've seen all that calculate into a 10 to 16% growth year on year for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. So that's been the reason it's driven Sydney and Melbourne. I think, as I mentioned, some of the other capital cities certainly haven't seen that level of growth, but, you know, our report indicates we think that there are going to be other areas, particularly southeast Queensland, that will start seeing fairly material growth over the next 12 months, 2 years.
Just picking up on a couple of points you made there, one about overseas investment. Do you see that, is that going to continue in 2017, or is the Asia story over?
I think that it will continue at a different rate. There's been a significant reduction in Chinese buyers in the last 6 to 12 months. And there's a few reasons, both locally and overseas, for that. But I would say that we're seeing half or even less than half the number of overseas Chinese buyers into the market currently in Sydney and Melbourne that we did see this time last year. A couple of reasons for that. There were some changes in terms of their local markets that the government made it, in China anyway, made it harder for capital outflows or for getting money out of the country, if you will. So that was a restriction that did make it tougher for people to bring a deposit across to Australia. Secondly, and more recently, we've certainly seen state governments increase significantly the stamp duty, which I think over the last few months has been a deterrent for some of the buyers, because it's just more expensive. In some instances, it's twice as expensive when it comes to taxes and duties. So, and that's not something that I agree with. I mean, in fact, I've been quite a strong opponent to that, because I think that when you look at it overall, whilst there was a big demand from overseas buyers in some areas of Sydney and Melbourne, overall it's kind of like the 1 to 2% at max impact on the Australian market. It's not a material factor everywhere else, and it's quite restricted to certain communities and suburbs in the cities where overseas buyers were buying. So I don't think it's a reason to be raising the taxes at all. I think you've got to take a long-term view, and the only long-term view I think Australians can sensibly take is we live in a global village and we're on the doorstep of Asia. In fact, we're connected to Asia. So if we don't show that we are interested in multiculturalism, we are interested in overseas investment, we're interested in people that want to migrate to Australia, the right sort of people that want to migrate to Australia, I think we're really going to lose a lot of opportunity going forward, as in fact Canada has, when it put up the shutters a couple of years ago to overseas investors, and their markets had a very bad reaction to it.
Well said, John. I want to swing you in another direction now. Another point you made was about supply, stock supply. Southeast Queensland, we're hearing a lot of reports of oversupply, particularly in the unit market, also out of Melbourne. Is that going to be a big factor in keeping prices down in Brisbane in 2017?
Only in pockets, Kevin. I think if you look at it statistically, most parts of Australia are undersupplied in general. Now, of course, there are pockets, and you know, we look at the valley up in Brisbane, we look at the inner suburbs of Melbourne, even some suburbs in Sydney where, you know, there has been a proliferation of concentrated development in the last couple of years, and there will be some pockets that I think the prices will suffer a little bit in those developments for the next year or two while the market corrects and the sort of balance comes back into equilibrium. So I think, you know, there's no doubt Fortitude Valley has been, again, a very well-documented area that has probably suffered a little bit because of the proliferation of development in the short term. I look at it and I put on my medium to long-term goggles on, and I look at it and I say, what a great area, you know, on the doorstep of the city, close to the river, in great, in an what I think is a very exciting precinct. So I think if you take a medium-term view, whether you bought there or you're going to buy there, you'll do exceptionally well. But probably for the next year or two, because of the large amount of property settling in a short period of time, you might see that it'll be a little bit tough to rent and sell properties. You'll see some price correction. We've already seen that. You might see a little price growth for the next couple of years. But I think over the life of your investment or your home, you know, which for most people is probably, you know, closer to 10 years than a year or two, you're going to see a lot of those areas will be great performers, but just not for the next year or two.
John, fast forward this time next year, what do you think we're going to be saying about 2017, the year just gone?
Oh, I think we're going to be saying that a lot of Australia started to see what Sydney and Melbourne saw the last few years. We're going to see growth in other parts of the country. I think you will start to see from now on in, we're getting early indications, Kevin, that the first quarter of next calendar year, so the next 4 months from now, that there's going to be a better flow of listings and I think a more normal volume of listings. So I think we'll start to see that. So I think from that aspect, it'll be better. I think it'll be the year that Sydney and Melbourne takes a breather and calms down off the back of five very strong years of growth. And, you know, I'm a great believer, and I hope that, and some people say, well, if you're in real estate, wouldn't you want, you know, prices going up every year? And I said, no, because you get to a point where if they go up too fast or too far, you are going to end in a correction. And I think if they go up, and really we've seen a catch-up, but if they go up and then take a breather for a few years, and then there'll be plenty more growth. Anyone that's buying real estate today for the next 10 years, you're going to see great growth. I just would like to see a bit of a breather in the two cities that have really outperformed the rest of the country.
John, great talking to you. We're out of time, unfortunately. The McGrath Report, we can get that through any one of your offices or on the web?
Yep, or our website. Yeah, either one would be great, and hopefully people get a few insights that equips them a bit better going forward.
Excellent. John McGrath, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Kevin. 4BC.
Some great news from the Real Estate Institute of Queensland about Redcliffe, and particularly those on the new Redcliffe Peninsula rail line. Kieran Clare from Australian Property Investor magazine has the story on this one. G'day, Kieran.
Hi, Kevin.
Welcome into the show once again. Redcliffe, a long time in waiting, but we always knew that rail link was going to be the answer, didn't we?
That's right. And isn't it interesting? We did a story on this a couple of years back, and I think in the research we found out that it was first touted over 100 years ago that they're going to do the rail link, and here it's turned up.
Oh, gee, it takes time, son.
Yeah, good things do. And lots of train infrastructure.
Look how long that second bridge took to get there.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And now we've got motor vehicles and everything.
Oh, I rode on that bridge the other day too.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I did, yeah. It's just over 3 km.
Yeah.
Just slightly over 3 km. And you always guaranteed you're going to get a headwind one way. We had the headwind on the way over. Great coming back, I can
bet.
Tell you. Yeah.
You just hoisted the sail in your home before
we did.
You know it.
It was no problem at all. Anyway, back to the story.
Back to the rail line, absolutely. Well, the rail line, in case people don't know, it includes 6 new stations from Kippering to Petrie. And, of course, it's making the whole area far more accessible to the CBD. Now, the REIQ says that properties located along this new extension will see strong growth and value over the coming years. And they've had a look at what's happened with the light rail down on the Gold Coast and come out and said that property values there went up by about $50,000 to $80,000 per property.
Wow.
And that's right, Redcliffe residents can expect much of the same. To help out the argument, the developer AV Jennings says there's also been a noticeable rise in the number of young professionals buying in the $400,000 price bracket in their Mango Hill estate. So it looks like those commuters are looking to go further afield and take advantage of great infrastructure.
Yeah, you've got to congratulate the council too. I mean, they're doing a wonderful job with the foreshore over there at Redcliffe. It looks absolutely beautiful as you come off the bridge and go along the front there. The work they're doing is just quite spectacular. Lots of playgrounds and lovely parks, and it really is a lovely location.
You deserve a place on the Tourism Council for Redcliffe.
Oh, well, okay. I should put my hand up for that.
I think you should.
Okay, we're going to talk about overseas students a little bit later in the show when Kieran Clare comes back. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Kevin.
Real estate on 4BC. Make the move to Water's Edge Apartments on the Redcliffe Peninsula. It's absolute waterfront luxury from just $875,000.
Well, so many questions people are asking now about what will be the likely impact of a new president in the United States. And now that we have a president, president-elect, President Donald Trump, I'm going to ask Michael Yardney to join me in this conversation as we explore what the possibilities are and what the likely impacts of that will be. Hi, Michael.
Hello, Kevin.
Michael, the first question is, what do you think Donald Trump will do as president that could affect us in Australia and, I guess, particularly our property markets?
Kevin, over the course of his campaign, he made lots of promises and lots of threats, and it got him where he is now. I hope now that he's going to become the president, he's going to become more pragmatic and not follow through with all of those. So what's going to happen will very much depend upon what he does. I hope he doesn't spend billions of dollars building a wall between one country and the next or putting Hillary Clinton into jail. So what's going to happen will really depend upon how smart he is, how good his advisors are. But he actually has already suggested that he's got a couple of, in my opinion, good ideas for America.
Yeah. Look, as we've seen too, especially in Australia, we've seen a lot of promises made during election campaigns that simply can't or won't ever be kept. And I just wonder, we're already seeing some of those break down, aren't we? Some of those promises that he made, particularly around the wall. You know, I'm not going to build as much of the wall. Even Obamacare, it looks like some of that's going to stay in place as well. So you do wonder, don't you, what policies he is going to bring in, Michael?
I don't think he's going to offend too many people by not doing those things. But his main plan is as follows. He suggested he's going to make major infrastructure investments and he's going to refire the American steel furnaces. He doesn't plan to use Chinese steel for all the new infrastructure changes. So that's good. Infrastructure changes and government spending on that is going to create jobs. Up till now, what the American government was trying to do, Kevin, was create jobs by lowering interest rates. Here, the government's actually going to spend money. I guess they're going to make money and spend it on jobs. The other thing he's going to do, Kevin, is lower the United States tax rates. And that's going to be for personal income tax rates, giving people more money in their pocket to spend. But interestingly, he's doing it for company rates. And while some people would suggest he's got a vested interest, I think there's another agenda, Kevin. I think what he's hoping is to suck back a lot of the American corporations' money that has been invested overseas, so they're going elsewhere where tax rates are lower. And if he can get the Americans to bring their money back home, that's got to be good for the American economy, Kevin.
Yeah. We saw a lot of reaction very quickly, Michael, didn't we? Do you think a lot of that was just over reaction, similar to what we saw at Brexit?
Yes, I think it was. The share market went up, the share market went down. Interestingly, the Canadian immigration website melted down with people wanting to know how to leave to go to Canada. Interestingly, there were more hits than ever on moving to Australia and moving to New Zealand. That's going to fade, Kevin. That's a knee-jerk reaction. But I think what isn't going to fade is his willingness to make America a strong economy again. So what he's going to do is make it harder for the Canadians, the Mexicans, the Chinese exporters to tap the US market, and he's going to try and make America a manufacturing country again by having higher tariffs. And I think the other big thing he's going to do, which will affect us, is he's going to stop America being the global policeman. That means countries like Japan, Korea, in fact, Australia also, are going to have to be a little bit more self-reliant on their defence. So some interesting times ahead.
Does that mean we're becoming more insular, Michael, as opposed to being more global?
Well, that was starting to happen in other countries as well, Kevin. So while the internet and international peace treaties and international trade treaties started to open up borders, we're now seeing the opposite happen with Brexit and with people being concerned about Syrian and other refugees, and here America saying, no, we're going to look after ourselves, thank you very much.
There's a lot of healing to go on, isn't there? I mean, I think the election campaign was one of the toughest that I've ever seen. And I do think there's been a big division in America.
Very much so. And you can see that with the protests that have occurred afterwards. So he's trod on a lot of toes. He's been rude to a lot of people. He hasn't acted statesmanlike, but I hope now that he's in there, he's going to do the right thing. And it looks like he's getting a very good team of people around him. Already a number of names have been touted for the top positions. One of the interesting comments that has happened, though, is, Kevin, that a lot of them are in their 50s, 60s and 70s, while Bill Clinton or John Kennedy had a lot of people in their 30s and 40s when they were president. I'm actually not that concerned about that. I'm happy that there are potentially some smart heads with money, with finance, who are going to be able to advise the new President Trump. That sounds interesting. I've never said that before.
No, President Trump. President Trump, yeah. Michael, I do wonder, you and I have spoken privately about this, and you may not want me to mention this now, but I know that your view is, in the early stages, you were saying you can't run a country the same way you run a business. Do you still hold with that?
Yes. If you run a private business, you're allowed to make decisions. You're allowed to say you're fired. You're allowed to send people off and say, make some good plans and then come back and I will decide if I choose to invest my money in that or not. But that's not the way you run a country. That's not the way you are a statesman. So you end up being more like a chairman of the board and having various committees and divisions underneath you who will be in many ways autonomous, and you'll have guidance of them, but you've got to let the smart people do their thing without interfering, Kevin.
Yeah, that's probably going to be the big challenge for him, isn't it? I mean, right now, early, very, very early stages, even before he becomes the president, we're seeing a different Donald Trump from the one we saw during the campaign. But I just wonder, when the pressure is on and things don't go the way he wants, whether we'll start to see the real Donald Trump again.
Well, what do they say? A leopard doesn't change
that's
its
right.
spots.
Yeah.
So it will be very interesting. And I think that's what's worrying people, Kevin, not just the American public, but the politicians around the world, because world trade, world commerce, world peace is very much dependent upon trust. I trust you that you'll cover my back in world peace. I trust you that if I'm actually going to buy your goods, you're going to pay me in dollars that are going to be worth much the same. So if he loses the trust of the economic advisors, other politicians, that could lead us into some problems, Kevin.
Mm. You touched on it earlier, Michael, about the number of inquiries on the internet. I've actually heard of an increase in inquiries already out of the US from buyers looking at Australian property in the light of Donald Trump's win. What have you heard?
Well, Kevin, I've read the same things that they are. But if you think about it, Americans are foreign investors and can only buy new and off-the-plan properties. They can come in here to visit, but they can't become immigrants easily. They've got to pass all the same tests. So I think it'll be much easier for them to, if they want to move somewhere else, move to Canada, which is actually on the same continent. And if they're going to buy properties here, they've got to learn that Australian real estate works very, very differently to the United States. So all Robert Kiyosaki's principles of cash flow positive property and flipping, because they haven't got the same stamp duty and they haven't got the same capital gains tax and they've got tax deductibility of the investment mortgage on their homes, all those rules are very, very different over here. So if they come here en masse, they may get a bit of a shock.
Mm. What impact could the win have on values, Michael?
Well, I believe what's going to happen, I hope what's going to happen, is that the American economy is going to pick up. He is going to be successful to a degree, maybe not as much as he expected, because he said the economic growth is going to double. But if it does pick up and the American government prints money to help it pick up, which he says he's going to do, and it's easy for them to do, that's going to create inflation.
Inflation, yeah.
And that's also going to create higher interest rates. Not straight away, but over time. And Australia doesn't live in isolation, so if world interest rates go up and the cost of our money goes up and the cost of the American dollar goes up, what it's going to mean is that our interest rates are going to go up as well, and we know that that will have a negative effect on particular segments of our property market, Kevin?
Yeah, I guess the American market, because it is so big, can absorb a little bit more than the Australian market, and it probably will happen a bit slower there than it would here, Michael. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, interest rates in America are virtually nothing.
Nil.
And what the government has done is try to stimulate the economy and spending by low interest rates. That's not working. It hasn't. So now the government has to do it differently. It actually has to spend because the consumers aren't, businesses aren't. And that's worked in Australia, and it's worked in other countries before, where smart spending, not on pink bats like we did here or on first homeowner grants, but on infrastructure that will see you through the future, like Australia did years ago with the Snowy Mountain Scheme and all the freeways and the underground and the tunnels that we've got in Melbourne and Brisbane and Sydney, to a degree. That sort of spending is good for the future, and it creates jobs. So if he does that, that'll work in America, and it'll make people happy again.
Yeah. Michael, could there be a different impact on various different types of the market, as in commercial, prestige, residential, even the unit market? Could it vary?
Very much so, Kevin. So you mentioned the commercial market. Overseas investors who buy the big shopping centres, office buildings, commercial properties, they're international investors. And if they have some concerns about the United States, and especially the Chinese investors who are possibly not going to be made feel welcome, they could actually put more of their money in Australia, which they see as a safer haven. Also, commercial property is very much yield-driven. So if interest rates go up, the value of commercial properties goes down a bit, so it could definitely affect it in that regard as well. I also think higher interest rates, as is possibly going to happen for the reasons we mentioned a moment ago, is going to have more of an impact on the first home buyer market, which are much more interest rate sensitive, and also to the investor market. And it's probably going to affect a lot of those new and off-the-plan properties where developers are going to have to pay more. But I think in our middle and inner ring suburbs, the more affluent suburbs, the established suburbs, people in Australia are still going to get married, still going to have babies, still going to get divorced, life's going to go on, and they're going to still have good jobs. So unless there's an economic impact in Asia from American issues, not maybe using as much Chinese goods and affecting the Chinese economy, our economy should still keep going reasonably well, and what we've spoken about being good homes and good investment-grade properties, they should hold their own.
Got a minute or two left, Michael. What should property investors do right now?
Well, let's say what they shouldn't do, Kevin. They shouldn't have a knee-jerk reaction. They shouldn't change their long-term plans because of short-term issues. Because we've seen that with Brexit, we've seen it with 9/11, we've seen it with the global financial crisis in 2008-2009. The value of well-located properties in Australia are going to keep going up because of our population growth and because of our general economic growth. So if you've been following a plan, if you've got a house in a good location, if you've got good investment grade properties, there's nothing different you need to do. And definitely don't pay too much attention to all the noise that's happening there. But keep an eye on what's going on, because every year there's an X factor, and we talked about that before. Maybe this is going to be that X factor, that factor out of the blue that we hadn't been prepared for that may affect our property and investment markets in 2017.
Well said, Michael. Thank you very much. Time will tell, but always appreciate your insight. Michael Yardney there from Metropole Property Strategist. Thanks, Michael.
My pleasure, Kevin.
Real estate on 4BC. Make the move to Water's Edge Apartments on the Redcliffe Peninsula. It's absolute waterfront luxury from just $875,000.
And it's bang on 10 minutes to 8. More news coming up with Jocelyn at 8 o'clock this morning. I told you at the opening of the show that there's an opportunity for you to get into some real estate at a very affordable price. And, of course, affordability is what everyone's talking about. But what about Bondi Beach, an apartment, and you can actually get in there for under $100? Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you how. Anthony Millett is the CEO of BrickX. We talked about BrickX a few weeks ago in the show. Well, here's a practical example of how it works. Good morning, Anthony. Thanks for your time.
Hi, morning, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Now, is this, well, obviously it's for real. You wouldn't be saying if it wasn't, but a Bondi Beach apartment for under $100. How does BrickX work?
That's right. So BrickX is a website, an online platform that's available to all Australians now to be able to invest in residential real estate at prices that are affordable and without really the need for fronting up the cash to buy the entire property. We buy selected properties, and we're advised by a very experienced real estate team, including Nerida Connersby, chief economist at realestate.com, Tim Lawless from CoreLogic, and find those properties that we want to bring to the platform, put them into a trust, which is then split into 10,000 units, which we call bricks, and investors are then able to buy anything from one brick up to 5% of the property. So a couple of weeks ago, we launched the Bondi Beach property onto the platform. There's $960,000 worth of equity in it. So split into 10,000 bricks, investors can get in from as little as $96.
And how's it going so far? When did you launch that one, Anthony?
We launched it about 10 days ago.
And how's it going?
Very good. We're very, very encouraged by what we're seeing so far. We've got over 195 investors in the property thus far, and we continue to be able to sell down bricks at the guaranteed price of $96 up until the 8th of December when the property settles.
Okay, and what happens if you don't get the full take-up, Anthony?
The property is fully underwritten, so in the event that we don't get the full take-up, then the underwriter will continue to hold the bricks for the share of the property that they continue to own. So there's certainty of it coming to the platform. There's certainty of investors getting the bricks that they want until they're sold out. And investors can go onto the website at brickx.com and see all of the financial information around the property, the estimated rental yield, and also some of the historic suburb growth that kind of gives you a feel for what's happened in Bondi historically.
Do the banks look at this and I mean, if someone came in and bought, and I imagine they can buy more than one brick, can't you? You can buy a number of bricks?
You can buy up to 5%. So you can buy up to 500 right. bricks in any individual property.
So how do the banks look at this in terms of investment or gearing against it? How are the banks looking at it?
So we're being well supported by the banks. We do have some mortgages on some of the properties. So there's a lot of diversity on the platform, some with mortgages, some without. And the banks are very comfortable lending against this. However, all of our properties are positively geared because we need to make sure that the cash flow coming in from the properties, from the tenants, covers the expenses of the properties.
So you've actually purchased, or someone, I imagine it's BrickX, has actually purchased this from the existing owners, or you've got a contract on it?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've exchanged. It's an external funder who provides the funds for BrickX to be able to facilitate this. So we've exchanged on it at the beginning of October, launched it about 10 days later, and now we're finding those original investors who'd like to get into this from the start of the life of the property on the platform up until the settlement date.
The property itself, is it currently rented or is it owner-occupied?
The property is currently owner-occupied. It's in a fantastic condition, as you generally do find when they're owner-occupied. Mm. It's a two-bedroom, one-bath unit, only about 300 or 400 metres or so from Bondi Beach, the beach itself. We really like Bondi Beach as a suburb. First of all, you can only build in certain areas. There's less opportunity for overdevelopment and building there, so you're finding that it's generally quite a tightly held suburb. Very, very strong demand from tenants as well. So the rental market there is very, very strong, continues to be very, very strong.
What do you estimate it'll rent for?
We think this particular property will rent between the region of $900 to $950 a week. Mm. But we are finding that the Sydney market continues to be, the rental market continues to be just as strong as the buyer's market at the moment. And our property in Doubleday, which we launched, I think I might have spoken to you about that one, Kevin, a few weeks back. We've attracted over 700 investors into that one. We'd predicted it would rent for about $850 a week. We actually ended up renting out for $1,000 a week.
Goodness. Okay, good. That's a bit of a bonus for everyone. A couple of other very quick questions. The profile of the investor, who's likely to be attracted to this?
Yeah, so intuitively you might think, well, this is something that's for, you know, people wanting to get into the property market that can't otherwise. And we do have a lot of people that are using the platform to get into the property market for the first time. But also interestingly, we're getting really good traction and appetite from existing property investors and especially those looking to invest their SMSF into this. You know, we're all often told to be able to diversify our investment, and naturally buying a house can be such a huge chunk of someone's capital, someone's retirement fund, that it seems like a risky option. And now with Briquette, we're finding that those SMSFs are coming along, putting $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 into the platform, and obviously diversifying across their portfolio.
And to get more information, what's the website again, Anthony?
So anyone can go and see all the full information at brickx.com.
Brickx.com, no .au. Thanks for your time, Anthony, and all the best. We'll check in with you in a few weeks' time, see how it's going.
Thanks very much, Kevin.
Good on you, Anthony. Anthony Millett, the CEO for Brickx. Brickx.com.
Weekend Real Estate with Kevin Turner. Thanks to Calypso Bay. Live your dream lifestyle in Southeast Queensland's premier waterfront development. CalypsoBay.com.au.
And that's indeed where we have to leave you. Thank you very much for your company. Thanks to Ashley and Jocelyn coming up with the news in just a moment. And visit Calypso Bay, Southeast Queensland's premier waterfront development, calypsobay.com.au, and Water's Edge Apartments on the Redcliffe Peninsula. Absolute waterfront luxury from $875,000. Thanks for your company. See you next Saturday and Sunday.